good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is John here from HC3, and I am joined once again with my good friend and colleague, Dr. David Krause. And today we're going to jump into something that's really kind of important because we're in the season. It's beautiful. Spring is here. Summer's here. Things are warming up, and so are pathogens. David, how are you doing, my friend?
I'm well today, but not as good as the pathogens are doing in our water.
I was just about to say that. It's like a field trip, a field day out for these pathogens, because we have noticed, and certainly I've noticed, we keep an eye on things. There's a lot of breakouts. There's a lot of exposure that's been happening recently. We're seeing it more and more where it's getting reported in the news, where it's getting reported from companies. Legionella and other pathogens, it's on the increase. I mean, this is the season. And with all the disasters, it's getting worse.
Absolutely. One of the things that we're seeing, not only in some of the legal cases I work with, but outbreaks, is that after a storm either hits or comes close to a community, a resort, a coastal area, that we often see an outbreak or an uptick in cases of Legionnaires' disease. The full reason behind that isn't clear, but ultimately, surveillance, testing, monitoring, making sure that your systems are working as well as they can is critical to everyone.
David, how important, you mentioned something there about testing, how important, we've covered this a little bit, but how important is it for companies and organizations, healthcare facilities, leisure facilities, to really be more proactive about testing? Because the breakout, the next exposure and the next breakout that's possibly bringing is only just around the corner.
Absolutely. And the contaminants that may be present in your water system today are the ones that could be causing the outbreak tomorrow. And the only way you can know that your system is or isn't at risk for Legionella and other waterborne pathogens is to submit samples for that analysis. You cannot rely upon the fact that the incoming water meets the Safe Drinking Water Act rules. You cannot rely upon whether or not you have good levels of chlorine or not good levels of oxygen or other disinfectants. You can't rely upon whether you're keeping the temperatures right. Rely upon a rabbit foot for good luck, because that's about the same. Unless you know through a substantial and rigorous testing program, you are operating in the blind, and you may not know you have an issue until it's too late.
You know, it's interesting to say that, because what I'm seeing, and from what I am picking up in the media, what I see from these outbreaks that seem to be happening more and more regularly, is that it's too little too late. They have an outbreak where you know that they could have been more proactive, but these organizations are seemingly waiting until someone either gets ill or someone dies, and then you have a big legal problem as well.
Absolutely.
But why do you think companies are, David, why are they not taking this as seriously as they should be?
A big part of it is awareness, and the belief and the story we've been sold for years is that the water quality we have in this country is top rate. That may have been the case in the past. It is not today. It is degrading regularly. And the unfortunate thing is, with the changes in HHS and the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention and funding for local and state health departments, I can tell you people are being let go. And many of the people who are being let go are epidemiologists who perform surveillance for infectious disease. The big problem there is we're not going to see small outbreaks when it's only three or four people. Without people daily looking at the case counts and the issues going on, what I suspect is going to happen as we move forward from today forward is that the cases and the outbreaks we see are going to be the large ones, where we've got 20, 30, 50, 100, 150 cases. And at that point, you're going to have multiple fatalities just because of the odds.
Do you think that companies can hedge their bets, or do you think it's more appropriate for them to start a management plan now to protect their visitors, their clients, their customers, whatever it is?
Protect their assets, protect your reputation. Know what you have. Know what pathogens are coming in your water and what you have in your water today. Do not assume because you've been fortunate enough to not have an outbreak or contamination occur in the past 5, 6, 10 years, don't assume it's not going to happen tomorrow, because Legionella, as we're finding, 20 to 30% of buildings that we look at where there's no outbreak are contaminated with Legionella. And it's just a matter of conditions, people, and maybe just bad luck that those contaminant sources turn into pathogenic organisms and start causing disease.
I think it's important for people to know that given the right conditions, Legionella pneumophila can pneumophila, sorry, I keep saying pneumophila. That's my Scottish thing. <It's okay. laughs> Pneumophila is the most dangerous pathogen, and it spreads rapidly. I mean, given the right conditions, it can colonize very quickly.
Yeah, it seems to like very specific conditions, but it's a pretty robust organism. I think one of the things that's very telling is that the latest round of reports from CDC in early March of last year declared and recognized that Legionella has surpassed all other waterborne pathogens combined for outbreaks associated with drinking water. And most of that is occurring in healthcare. But number two, a close second, is vacation rentals, lodging, hotels, resorts, cruise ships. So
yeah,
all of those areas are at risk, and they continue to be at risk. And as we move forward into the Legionella season, Legionella has some seasonality to it, and in which the condition seem to be better, more prime, more favorable for both colonization of buildings and outbreaks of disease. So as we move into the summer months and into the fall, we normally and historically have seen an increase in case counts.
And also because we've had so many hurricanes and disasters, this increases. And I want to jump on in a minute to kind of a route of transmission with it, because I think that's important for people to understand. But I think it's also equally important for people to understand that the amount of natural disasters that we have had has increased the risk of these pathogens spreading.
Absolutely, absolutely. When we compromise our potable drinking water systems, reservoirs, rivers, and lakes that are used to hold our drinking water, the increase in organic matter, the increase in bacteria in those waters translate into increased bacteria in our drinking water. And that can work its way into our buildings, our cooling towers, hot tubs, water heaters, assisted living facilities, nursing homes, hospitals, and that's where it takes seed and turns into a pathogenic risk.
Which this is a really nice segue into my next highlight here, because I think this is really important, because a lot of people don't understand, David, even though we've talked about it, we've written about it, we've some great articles, ladies and gentlemen, that you can go and check out on our site, hc3fl.com. But it's important for you to understand the route of transmission. How does Legionella get into your system? And it might shock you because it's in the everyday things that we are utilizing. David, let's go over that.
Absolutely. You know, Legionella is a soil-borne pathogen, but it also lives in the water system. So it's rivers, streams, lakes, ponds. Ultimately, it can get into our drinking water system either through the water source it pulls from, or when we have construction, water main breaks, pipe leaks, those type of thing past the water treatment facility. So it's not being subjected to the chemical treatment that you would hope it is. So it's kind of, you know, the horse is out and now we're closing the barn door. So once it gets into that water, as you run your faucet, you bring in water from the city water system, the municipal water supply, it comes in, it finds a nice habitat within your building's water system or your cooling tower or, you know, even garden hoses we found can be contaminated and colonized. And then, but they become a source of exposure when you're dealing with washing your car and or using a pressure washer or, you know, watering the yard. All of these are very everyday activities that expose people to Legionella and can result in disease. Most commonly, it's in our showers, it's in our water heaters, it's in our hot tubs and spas. Those are the areas we really recognize. These other sources, that may be contributing to sporadic cases around the community haven't been well researched and are often, unexplored and go unrecognized until people contract the disease. And this normally causes people to end up in the hospital. Legionella has a very high hospitalization rate and fatality rates approach 10% for general members of the community.
And it's a very historical disease, because we actually talked about this before. We had a discussion about it, which you can go and listen to, ladies and gentlemen, about the history of Legionella. There's the reason I want to mention that is because a lot of our veterans in healthcare facilities are at risk and higher risk.
Absolutely, absolutely. Legionnaire's disease, actually, we're approaching next year. Will be the anniversary. We're looking at 50 years since Legionella.
And we're doing something special for that. We're not going to let the cat out of the bag yet, but we're doing something special for this. So stay tuned, ladies and gentlemen.
Absolutely. Hope everyone's with us in the next few months, but we're definitely looking forward to increase awareness and acknowledge the sacrifices of our veterans, both during times of war and after.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, the history of Legionnaire's disease in this country continues to be written. This is an emerging pathogen that has really worked its way into our lives. And if we don't take steps to identify it and prevent it, it will often take the lives of those we love.
And you know, it's interesting, David, as well, because we've talked about this many times before. I mean, and we're getting into the season. And one of the reasons that we're getting into the season, this is a season when people, since summer, people start to go on holiday, there's cruises that happen. We're seeing more and more cases come from cruise ships, which most people would think totally safe. There's nothing, we worry about COVID in cruise ships, but should we really also be really worrying about pathogens in the water, not just like COVID-19, but looking at towards Legionella, because we're having breakouts on cruise ships, and no doubt that's translating into hotels and leisure industry.
Absolutely. Ships in general are at higher risk. I've done investigations on freighters and private yachts, as well as large cruise ships. The bathing facilities, the hot tubs are certainly an issue there, but also just their bunkered water and water conservation measures that are typical on any type of marine vessel tend to allow for Legionella to grow and amplify. And it's a fine place to catch a deadly disease.
And it's a fine place for colonization. And actually, not that I want to frighten everybody, but remember, some of the most deadliest diseases came from ships. I want to go back to the 13th century when we got plague coming from as well. Not that I want to frighten anybody, but that's how it happens. And do you think, I've got to obviously be careful because, we don't want to cause any legal issues, but do you think, or have you got an opinion on cruise organizations and the way that they proactively don't proactively deal with the potential threat of Legionella, because nobody really thinks that it's a massive threat?
Well, I will say that there are programs in place, predominantly managed at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Those programs are at risk, as all public health agencies are right now, being defunded, and their institutional knowledge and experts being let go. So it will be interesting to see what's remaining in the coming months. Some cruise lines are better than others. Some are more protective because they recognize the impact that these outbreaks have on their reputation, their bookings, and just the overall safety of their customers. But ultimately, I think it's also important that they are operating on guidance and information from public health agencies that isn't necessarily evidence-based.
Yes.
And while they may be, crossing every T and dotting every I, that may not be enough in order to prevent what they're trying to prevent.
Yes, absolutely.
And moving forward in that direction, we have identified a number of factors that really need to be taken into account. And whether or not they treat hot tubs in a certain way or heat water to a certain temperature, we've learned that many of those efforts were only partially effective or completely ineffective at all. So a lot of questioning of dogma in recommendations and guidance and best practices published by the CDC for many years is certainly worthwhile.
But do you think, though, because, and we've discussed this before as well, that even, you know, obviously CDC, public health is at risk, but their documentation is rather antiquated. I mean, there's not any up-to-date. This is one of the things that you, obviously you've been working on tirelessly within HC3 to try and rectify the gap that exists. But even if someone is trying to follow this and follow the CDC, it seems to me that it's a bit like the horse is bolted. We need more up-to-date information, up-to-date data so that we can action it, so that we can take the appropriate strategies. And that just doesn't seem to be happening. So maybe is it better then that companies, obviously they come to people like yourself as being one of our leading experts, rather than just relying on old data?
Yeah, well, and guidance from an agency or an organization or health agencies that really don't stand behind their recommendations. You know, having somebody prescribe to you in general what you should be doing without knowing your specifics, your specific systems, your specific water heaters and plumbing systems and usage patterns, and all the details, where details critically matter. They absolutely matter. And where if you had someone who was familiar and intimate with those system details and operational status, they could give you meaningful, actionable guidance rather than, oh, go try this and try that and maybe that'll work. You don't have the time, the money, the resources, or the luxury of giving it a shot.
You David, is there a standardized practice for, let's say, a standardized SOP for maybe the cruise lines that would be different to maybe a hotel leisure organization or, you know, holiday cabins? Is there a standard SOP for dealing with that? Like, how often should they be testing? Sorry.
Well, testing and surveillance, that's one thing. Yeah. What they need to do to control the organism, that's another. So testing and surveillance, certainly quarterly, monthly, depending on the operations and the usage rates and the tempo of the facility. But one of the things that I've been working on with the American Industrial Hygiene Association is developing what we call the principles of good practice for waterborne pathogen assessments. And it's defining what competencies, knowledge, skills, and abilities a competent technician and a competent professional should have. And then when they're performing their assessments and interpretation and measurements and data and reporting, what are the tent poles? What are the principles they need to be adhering to? Now, the everyday practice, you may get nuances. You may get somebody who's just, you know, competent. Yeah. You may get somebody who's, you know, over and above eminently competent and trained in expertise. But right now, as it stands today, you cannot rely upon a single person's credential, education, background, or licensure. It is buyer beware. Understand.
And that's very dangerous, David, I would think, because if you don't have the competency, if you don't have the knowledge, and you don't have the experience, and this is something I think about a lot, it doesn't matter if you understand the theory. If you don't have the experience, then you could be leading someone up the wrong
John,
path.
I will tell you that the old term, fake it till you make it, I have seen way too many times. I've lost count of how many outbreaks I've ended up being consulted on and brought into later in the process, where we're the second, third, fourth consultants brought in, because the first round or several really didn't know what they were doing, but they were making it up as they went along. They were Googling that stuff. They were, you know,
I can't believe that
training, whatever you want to call it. But, you know, without a defined core competency and some type of certification that the person you're talking to is just not entirely full of hot air. Without that, you are at risk of hiring somebody who may give you bad advice, poor interpretation, and ultimately prolong the likelihood of additional cases occurring.
Let's talk a little bit about the legalities of it, because you're heavily involved with little legal organizations in regards to legal, you know, lawyers in regards to outbreaks. What are the ramifications of a company that is potentially looking at? Because if they're not proactive, it's like playing Russian roulette, you know, and like see if it spins. If it hits you, you're gone, right? So we're kind of playing Russian roulette. But obviously, there's another dynamic to this, because if they do get an outbreak and they could have been proactive to stop it, now they've got another problem, because now that you've got a lawsuit.
Yes. Yes.
How serious is that, David?
Well, I mean, the litigation and lawsuits, Legionnaires' disease is often covered under in current, you know, general liability policies, but depending on your policy limits, you can exceed those. If cases occur, obviously, when fatalities happen, those often are much more, there's a higher payout for those. When people end up in the hospital, have lifelong debilitating illnesses and injuries, that often is reflected in the settlements or awards from the juries. These can certainly be prolonged court cases that distract from the organization's primary goal and mission.
Yeah.
It distracts from it draws resources. It is carried out in public. This is often carried out in a very public manner, and can ruin the reputation of an organization.
Can ruin the brand. Absolutely.
It absolutely can. I have seen hotels, large hotels, and their management groups and owners go bankrupt. And
wow.
In which they have looked back and said, it is because of that outbreak and how it was handled and our inability to recover from that. So the big question for me as a professional is, are the protective measures you're implementing, are the control measures, are the proactive measures you're taking, are they effective? Are you sending your samples to a reliable laboratory? Are you taking actions that really affect Legionella, or you just think it might help it or reduce the risk? I have seen numerous cases in legal cases where, looking backwards, they used a laboratory that frankly just wasn't worthwhile, wasn't quality, and they weren't detecting the Legionella that was in their water. And so they had non-detect result, and boom, outbreak. And then they bring in consultants or laboratories to test the water, and they find that it's everywhere. So just because you get a negative finding, a negative result, do you know the questions to ask and query and have comfort that that negative result is truly a negative result? Does it truly mean you are not at risk, or is it blind?
A false positive.
A false negative.
False negative, sorry. Negative.
You know, are you just putting on blindfolds and whistling as you're passing the graveyard? So, you know, that is a circumstance I have seen, and some laboratories play on that.
I guess I guess what they need to do is continue the testing, continue to identify patterns, which they're not doing, because it seems to me that the organization tests, gets a negative, we're clear. That's not the case.
A one-time test at best tells you what you are right now. Legionella does tend to grow, colonize, you know, set up household. But what you really need to do is have a testing program that's based upon a risk assessment.
Yeah.
So having a knowledgeable, informed, competent professional assess the facilities and the systems in place, identify what is at risk and what isn't at risk, and develop a targeted, efficient testing program that continues to evaluate those at-risk systems. Now you've got something that you can rely upon. and say, all right, not only are we doing this testing, but we're also working with a professional who is going to be there to back us up if things change, if conditions change, if we are accused of having an outbreak, but we have the documentation that it's not us. That would be a great thing to have in your back pocket.
So it's important for organizations to start their own surveillance monitoring program so that they can keep on top, because obviously and I think they need to understand as well. I think people out there that may be going on holiday, maybe going on a cruise ship or, you know, and we haven't talked about this, but I guess there's still the same problems in airplanes. Let's talk about how quick it is, how fast or how many days was the timescale for Legionella colonizing? Because that's obviously a big differential between your false negative to then it becoming positive.
Yeah. I can tell you, in a brand new system that we used for some research, we were working at the laboratory using real equipment, real water heaters, real plumbing, not just laboratory glassware. We were able to initiate colonization of that system within 6 weeks.
See, but that's
brand
why.
New system.
Yeah. And that's why they'll miss it.
Yeah, in a brand new hot tub at a facility where we had them replace all the hot tubs. We found one hot tub that was not properly treated. It didn't get on the list, and it went from brand new out of the box to fully colonized with LP1 in 14 days.
See, so, and that's crazy.
Yeah, yeah.
And you think about, ladies and gentlemen, think about if you're the CEO of a leisure organization, or, you know, I'm not going to mention any names because that's a legal thing, but a big hotel organization, and you're putting in hot tubs or even in showers and new showers, and obviously you get that, you think everything's hunky-dory, but within 6 weeks, boom, you've got an outbreak. Think about what you need to really be doing. And as David has said, companies have lost their livelihoods. Companies have lost, they've gone bankrupt. Big organizations, just because of this lawsuit, because of the outbreak. It's important to be really proactive. And I think as well, David, it's important for us to educate and make the public more aware.
Yeah,
I know when I go into a hotel, and I'm looking at the showers.
That has truly been a failure of public health, is awareness in the general public of the risks of waterborne pathogens, Legionella, non-tuberculous mycobacteria, Pseudomonas. These cost our citizens and our medical system billions of dollars a year.
Yeah, they do.
In direct healthcare costs. And it's poorly monitored. Just in general, we, you know, gathering that data, these numbers that I'm mentioning here are from data from 2014. So it's at least 10 years old. And so what are the levels that we're dealing with now? It is, you know, penny wise and pound foolish, you know, to not recognize these risks, not manage them, and then have to scramble and, you know, redirect all the efforts of an organization when a case or an allegation of a case or an outbreak occurs.
I want to kind of change strategy here a little bit, the discussion a little bit, but it's still very important. We're kind of overlapping, but I had a discussion a long time ago when I was quite shocked that, you know, soil, I know that it's a soil-borne organism. And as we are now coming in, yes, we've got the problems in waterborne pathogens, but there's also a risk, and we're coming in, you know, into the summer months and the warmer weather to soil. And when we're out in our garden and we're utilizing compost and buying these bags, there's a potential threat there as well, David, isn't there?
It's been well recognized for many years in Great Britain and Australia, New Zealand, that bagged soil, compost, mulch can contain a different species of Legionella that tends to be present in these environments. And that when people, you know, aerosolize, basically dump the bags out into a raised bed garden, or in some ways kind of create a dust out of this material, that you can breathe it in. and some people will contract Legionnaires from this this exposure. It's a different species called Legionella longbeachiae, like Long Beach, California.
Long Beach. No, I can say that, right? Because that does sound like I can get away with that with my Scottish vernacular, longbeachiae. It sounds like a drink I would have.
Exactly. Just put a little umbrella in it and you're good to go. So this is rarely associated with outbreaks. It's usually individuals who have contracted it from that very exposure. And I've done some, I've been involved in one case that involved that. And we did find it. That's what he was exposed to and contracted the disease from. So it can ruin somebody's life. It can result in fatality if conditions go poorly.
But
that is one that's, I'll say, practically not even considered by public health officials.
It's not. And I think it's, again, this is this awareness factor that we need to bring out into the public domain. And this is why we're talking about it. And the other thing I want to kind of jump onto as well, David, is that normally Legionella pneumophila is tend to linked to veterans and older people because they're more susceptible to it if they've got health conditions. And, we've written about that in the past as well. But I think it's getting more and more prevalent with our younger age as well.
Yeah. Well, with any outbreak, there's typically a spectrum of people who are affected. And while greater than 50% are typically identified as those with pre-existing conditions and a high risk, compromised immune systems, former or current smokers, people with COPD or undergoing chemotherapy or some type of cancer treatment that's inhibiting their immune system.
What about people that's exposed to COVID-19? Would they be at higher risk as well?
I don't know. I don't think there's been any studies that have considered that, that I'm aware of. I do know that, so say around 40-45% of any population of an outbreak may be younger and not have any pre-existing conditions. But typically, those are people 17, 18 years and older. We rarely ever see children or infants affected by Legionnaires. But there is a factor as far as use of cannabis, THC in medical marijuana or even recreational marijuana. There's enough case studies and laboratory studies that explain that THC does make people much more susceptible, even at very younger ages, to contracting Legionnaires' disease. That has been, I'll say, recognized in the published literature, but has not been fully explored by federal or state public health officials. And at this point, they do not even ask if individuals who've contracted Legionnaires' disease use THC-containing compounds.
Would this go for vaping when the youngsters are vaping as well? Is that some potential?
Vaping is a whole other thing, depending on what's in the vape.
Right, okay.
But THC by itself. So whether you smoke it or you drink it or you eat it, THC, that compound, inhibits the alveolar macrophages, the cells in our lungs that are there to contract and fight off Legionella. And so, that seems to be a pretty straightforward mechanism and, is a risk factor that's rarely considered. And certainly, again, public awareness, everything carries with it some risk. And I think folks who are are users of THC and medical marijuana need to understand that that is a possible outcome.
David, I want to thank you for being with me. I know that we've kind of had to squeeze this in because you're very busy and you've got other appointments now. But I think it's important, these discussions that we have are building that bridge that we need. It's making people more aware out there of the potential problems associated with Legionella. Send a message. What would you say to companies that are looking for help now that are worried about this?
Well, you're at risk if you own a property and it's got running water in it.
That's huge.
There you go. Beyond that, the level of that risk may be small. The level of that risk may be large. Know your risk. Work with, find competent professionals to help you identify and manage that risk, and move forward and do what you're there to be doing.
David, thank you for being with me this afternoon. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for listening. If you've got any questions, then please reach out to us at hc3fl.com. Any question, no matter how silly it is, we will take it on board and we'll help you. If you're an organization, then connect with David or the team and they will help you. These conversations are important as we bring out more and more. If you have got a question or you don't understand anything, let us know, because that's why we're bringing these conversations out, to bring you, the public and the media, to understand the dangers of waterborne pathogens. Make sure to connect with us. God bless.
Thank you. Have a great day.